The Athletic.
Dudley Football League show. The regular season may have finished, but there's still plenty to talk about with the playoffs in full swing. We'll put a foot slash glove inside the Sunderland camp ahead of their Wembley date and preview the weekend's games whilst Rob Edwards swaps hummus for Hornets, leaving a bitter taste in FGR's mouth. This is the Totally Football League show in association with Paddy Power. Welcome along then, listener. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams, joined today by the former Swindon striker, Sam Parkin.
Hello, Matt.
Hello, Sam. I'm fresh off the WSL finale. We're joined by commentator Robin Cowan. Hi, Robin.
Hi, Matt.
Abby's put in the script here, favourite playoff memories. I think that's a bit harsh on you, Robin, given that, Oxford haven't made it and when they do tend not to do that well. Do you have one?
Well, no. Up from the conference back in 2010, what a memory that was. Alfie Potter scoring late on to make it 3-1 against York City. And yeah, just being hugged by people I'd never met, grown men in tears. Absolutely fantastic. But yeah, we won't speak about Wickham a couple of years ago. The less said about that, the better.
Sam, I think you're probably in my camp, aren't you? Playoffs just equal misery and heartbreak.
Pretty much, although I was there for last minute Bobby Zamora against Derby, which I'm sure is close to your heart as well. Matt, I was there for that and we had a glorious pile on, me and my brother and my friends. So that one. And to suck up to the Swindon fans, the Swindon 4, Leicester 3, I think as well. The comeback.
Greatest playoff final ever, that?
It's up there, isn't it? Charlton Sunderland would probably rival it. The Swindon goal by Craig Maskell that kissed the inside of the post. Well, kissed is an understatement. It thumped the inside of the post and made this glorious sound in the old kind of Wembley nets at the old stadium. So, yeah, that game, bit of a favourite of mine.
For more on the difference between a kiss and a thump of the post, by the way, check out the Football Clichés podcast. This week's episode goes big on that. We're going to talk more playoffs later, but I thought we should start today with this story of Rob Edwards leaving FGR to go to Watford for next season. He'll be back in the Championship. He's 39 years old, which is 7 years less than Roy Hodgson, the man he's replacing, has been a manager for, which is pretty extraordinary. Really loving all this rancour, though, Robin, between FGR and Watford and Rob Edwards. It is totally what we're here for.
Oh, I mean, with the Wagatha Christie going on at the same time, it's almost too rich, isn't it, all this stuff? But, just hook it to my veins. It's absolutely brilliant. I mean, I can see both sides. I love Dale Vince kind of popping up and like a sort of jilted lover. I was so disappointed just, you know, after all we've done for him. Yeah, it's a really interesting one from both aspects. It was always going to happen. He's done an incredible job. Going to Watford, I mean, we all know what they're like. It seems like a big change of direction from them, as you mentioned. I mean, from Roy Hodgson to Rob Edwards, you couldn't really get much different from that. So hopefully, from a Watford point of view and Rob Edwards' point of view, this means that they've changed direction in terms of actually giving managers a chance. But if he does get sacked after a bad start, you can't say to him you weren't warned, because we all know they've got previous with this. So yeah, interesting. And as you say, though, the best thing is the beef between the two clubs. Absolutely magnificent. Loving it.
Well worth reading the statement again, just in case anybody missed it. FGR confirms the departure of head coach Rob Edwards. Rob was a key part of the team that gained promotion to League One this season. We're disappointed that our support, loyalty and honesty towards Rob has been repaid in this way, with negotiations taking place behind our backs. We had no contact from Watford, from whom we might expect less. But in any event, this kind of behaviour gives football a bad name. We thank Rob for all his work at FGR, forgive him the manner of his departure, and wish him well. What a brilliant end that is. Sam, you get why they're annoyed that they weren't contacted, but in any other walk of life, person gets offered job for more money at higher level, takes it, is not really a shock, is it?
No, of course not. And firstly, we'd all be disappointed if Rob Edwards walked out on any one of us, the handsome devil, wouldn't we?
Oh, yeah.
See last pod. So, no, I completely get that, Matt. It's a hell of an opportunity for him. But as Robin says, I mean, what a gamble. You know, what a gamble at this stage of his career to go to a club where essentially I feel the players consistently throw the manager under the bus. I think you've got owners there that obviously aren't afraid to change. And there's probably been too much player power at that club for too many years now, even after Troy Deeney's left, who had a big say with things, I would imagine. So I hope that doesn't happen to him, because he showed this year, you know, what a talent he is. And yeah, the natural progression would have been probably to step up to, I don't know, a decent sized club in League One, or, you know, a Championship club that was a little bit more stable. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. But I mean, in terms of Forest Green, they'll probably, well, they could very well go for someone from complete obscurity, because Rob Edwards was not someone who'd managed before. And we know that Dale Vince likes to do things slightly differently. So we'll wait and see what happens.
Yeah, just looking at the odds for the next manager, Ian Birchnell, who's at Notts County, there in the playoffs in the National League, is the favourite at 2-1. I thought, Robin, we might see Greta Thunberg or somebody from Massive Attack or whatever on the list. This is quite prosaic. Paul Tisdale, Michael Appleton, Graham Coughlin, Lee Johnson. Come on, guys.
That's a very good point. Yeah, just trying to think who else. Just, yeah.
Hey, if someone was ever built for that job, it's Paul Tisdale.
Yeah, you'd have thought so.
His stock's not great, not very high at the moment, though, is it?
Be interesting to see who they go for. As Sam says, I'm sure they've got some interesting ideas. So we'll see what happens with Watford and Forest Green. We know that Tony Mowbray is leaving Blackburn. That is official now. This feels like a real own goal, Robin, to me from Blackburn, because they don't seem to have anybody lined up. And you've got somebody who, you know, he's not a thrill-a-minute kind of manager or maybe even person. But to deal with what you have to deal with at Blackburn, you need a steady hand on the tiller. He's that. So who's going to come in and replace him?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, Sam said it about Rob Edwards. I think it's a huge gamble for Blackburn Rovers, because he's done a magnificent job. You know, when he came in, they were absolutely on the floor, you know, relegated, got them straight back up, and has steadied the ship. And not only that, a real playoff challenge this season. And maybe, you know, he's been there 5 years. You could argue, you know, it's time for a fresh voice, perhaps. But I don't think anyone would do a better job than him. So, yeah, I'm not sure where they go from here. Anyone who they appoint, it's going to have to be someone pretty spectacular to appease the fans, I imagine.
Well, meanwhile, the Athletic understand that the Birmingham assistant Mark Kennedy is the favourite for the Lincoln job. But Mark Bowen will not be manager of Wimbledon next season. We spoke, Sam, last week about whether he deserved to have another go. The consensus was generally no. In the statement that Wimbledon put out, it says that Bowen himself actually ruled himself out of contention for the gig on a permanent basis, which seems like an odd one to me. Is that because he doesn't feel he has the knowledge of League Two, or because he feels it's beneath him, do you think? And who do they go for next?
I would imagine it would have been a career move, something that suited him better, because I think it's a decent job. I don't think Mark Bowen's going to probably be in the running for, you know, Championship jobs right now. Wimbledon's obviously rebuilding, and I thought it probably would have been the sensible way to go, actually. You know, as much as I was surprised when he was handed the reins, I think considering they sacked a rookie manager and went with experience, I think to try and get back to League One level in the short term, Mark Bowen would have probably been a decent proposition. So a little bit surprised that he's taken a role at Reading, I understand. But yeah, I think Wimbledon are going to have a bit of a rethink, because I felt, you know, I said it so many times on this podcast, I felt it was like an enormous season for Wimbledon, going into the new stadium, changing the ethos, introducing younger players, not being reliant on a big number nine and set pieces, centre halves to get your goals. There was a big change, I think, going on at Wimbledon, and it faltered and faltered badly. So, yeah, I thought in the short term experience was probably a good idea. So I'd imagine they'll probably still go down that route rather than, you know, pluck someone from the FA or what have you, like we've seen with Forest Green.
A former Wimbledon player, obviously.
Yeah, I was just running Jones through who that could be. Is it time for the Vinnie Jones return? Are we going to see, I don't know, Neil Sullivan or Andy Thorne or FN Akuku get the job? We'll have to
Besson,
wait and see.
Dave Besson.
Yeah, well, just think of him dropping that bottle of salad cream on his foot and breaking it. It's not the kind of thing that you want in League Two from a manager, necessarily. That's enough managerial chat. We'll have a quick break and then we'll look back on what happened in the League One playoff semi-final.
With both the men's and ladies' finals taking place, it's going to be a bumper weekend for FA Cup cliches.
The magic of the cup.
Form goes out the window. Here at Paddy Power, we can't prevent the cliches.
No easy games.
Ricky Veer.
Cagey first 15 minutes.
But we can provide giant killing offers, like money back as a free bet if one leg of your 4+ fold bet builder lets you down. Paddy Power.
Pre-match online bet but a bets only. Min odds 1-5 per leg. Max free bet £10 per day. 7-day free bet expiry. Excludes enhanced match odds. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Driven in by Clark and forced in by Patrick Roberts. It's come in additional time. Sunderland surrounded on Sheffield Wednesday soil, but they don't fear anyone. And they now are dreaming of Wembley.
So we now know that the League One playoff final, which takes place next Saturday, aka the 21st of May, will be between Wycombe Wanderers and Sunderland. That after the Black Cats booked their place by overcoming Sheffield Wednesday. The second leg finished 1-1 at Hillsborough on Monday night after Sunderland won the first leg by a goal to nil. We spoke, Robin, there about, Sam was saying about that brilliant Swindon playoff final from the 90s. I wonder if we're a bit stuck in the 90s when it comes to the playoffs, because I sit down for these games and go, right, this is going to be the most exciting game of football that there's ever been. It's going to be drama for 90 minutes for both legs and then maybe extra time too. These were two of the worst games of football I've seen this season.
Yeah, I think, you kind of expect it from the finals, don't you? Because there's so much at stake. And usually the semi-finals are slightly better, but no, very, very cagey. I think I hate the word chess match because that does mean boring, and also like for the purist, which again means boring. So I just think it was all of these teams just have really good coaches, really well coached, knew what they wanted to do. I think especially Sunderland played an absolute blinder. They stayed in the game after. They had a really good first half, I felt, and then Sheffield Wednesday had quite a lot of momentum going into half-time and didn't quite get it back after the break. Sunderland defending for their lives. They even had the sort of cliched Bailey Wright with the bloody eye at the end, which is always a tick in the box. And yeah, it just feels like under Alex Neil, they just seem to have someone who knows exactly what he's doing. I think that Wycombe are going to be very difficult, probably the most difficult opponents for anyone, no matter what level. But yeah, I just thought it was a really good all-round performance from Sunderland.
We'll talk more Sunderland later. Sam, is this, well, obviously it's a concern for Sheffield Wednesday, but the ramifications of another season in League One, you know, we're told they lose £500,000 at the moment when they were in the Championship. People like Barry Bannon, are they going to want to stick around for another season? And do you think that Darren Moore's got it in him to have another go at trying to get them up?
I get the sense that there's not real panic from this. I think everything I've read from the Sheffield Wednesday supporters is that they're quite balanced, that, you know, he's brought a few smiles back on their faces in recent months, and that Sunderland, as Robin said, just shaded this. I think in retrospect, was he a bit safe in that away game? I've not seen Sheffield Wednesday play so timidly in recent months. They normally play on the front foot. They normally create. There was none of that really in the home game. And they didn't have the... They weren't in the ascendancy enough at Hillsborough to deserve, I think, anything more than they got, really. But I don't see it as being a panic. I would stick with him. I think there's the basis of a good squad there. I think Barry Bannon, who you mentioned, is talismanic figure there, really, and it's a huge club, very well supported. I think he enjoys himself there. I could see him sticking around, and I could see them, if they add to the squad, being strong favourites to go back up last year. But again, I think we need more strikers as managers, basically, don't we? Alex Neil was a tough terrier-like midfielder, and Darren Moore was a uncompromising stopper. We need more strikers to open up these games, clearly, but you know, in all truth, I just think Alex Neil, the way the team are set up defensively, has been superb. 17 games he's had, and they've only conceded more than one on two occasions. And I think one of those was a victory. So I think that says it all. You know, they're in every game, and I felt that they looked very secure in this game, even when they went one goal behind. So deserved win, but no, I don't see any panic with Wednesday.
Right, defensive security for Sunderland. Maybe our next guest has had a part to play in that. We'll speak to the Black Cats goalkeeping coach, David Priest, next. David, as a Sunderland boy, where does Monday rank in terms of your career highlights?
Yeah, it's right up there with all the occasions that I've had at the club. And as you said, as a Sunderland fan, it's amazing just to be going to Wembley with the club I supported as a boy.
Did you celebrate much as a group, or are you kind of saving that for the final?
I think the whole attitude towards it from everyone, not just from the manager, but right down to the players and the rest of the staff, it was a case of we've achieved nothing. We had to enjoy the moment, of course. It was a brilliant atmosphere. Seeing the fans the way they were, I know how much they've been through these past, certainly 5 years since we've come down from the Premier League. It's been a tough time for them. And just listening afterwards to listen to what it meant to them and the way that they were celebrating. It was a long time since we've had something to celebrate like that, especially the game on Friday night at the Stadium of Light. It's a testament to the fans, the effort that they and the club had put in to put on an occasion. And gladly we managed to rise to that and make sure that it didn't fall flat on its face.
Yeah, it was a magnificent occasion over the two games. In terms of you and this season, what's it been like for you? And what's it like for the goalkeeper coach when the manager changes? Because presumably there was a bit of fear for you there about whether you'd be kept on or not.
Yeah, and I think Sam knows exactly how it is in football. There's kind of acceptance when things like that happens, you know that that could be the case. And but literally you've just got to get on with your job and make sure you do the best job possible. And then if you want to buy the next manager, then it's great and you just get on with it. It was quite fortunate for me that when I came in, you know, I was a club appointment rather than coming in with and being attached to a manager. So that certainly helped. But again, you know, credit's got to go to Alex Neil for the way that he's handled things when he came in. And yeah, he's made us all feel, you know, that we're very much part of the plans.
Preece, he seems to have had the touch in terms of making changes from the bench, substitutions, changing shape, and you getting late goals. What was the thought process the other night, not making a change, even when you were behind in that game? It obviously turned out all right, but I suppose that was something that took everyone a little bit by surprise.
Yeah, I think the manager's explained it well himself. You know, he got the feeling that changing things perhaps, not that it would make anything, everything any better, but it's just the fact that he trusted so much in the players and what they were doing. They didn't look tired. It could have been easy for us to assume that after the two games and the effort they've put in over the two games. And we looked at the numbers sort of the last couple of days. They put an incredible amount of effort into it. It's a testament to them that they didn't really look tired. And as a manager, when you're going into a game, you come up with a game plan and the players carry that out, and you've still got that faith in them that despite going behind, despite being up against it for a good 10, 15 minutes after that equaliser, you know, the faith that he has in the squad, it says a lot about the players, and not just about them as players, but as characters as well. And I think that, it could have been easy to panic and easy to think something needs to change and to try and sort of curb what Sheffield Wednesday were doing at that time. But I think over the two games, over the course of all everything that had gone on, we always felt like, not that we were comfortable, but that we were things were being carried out the way we wanted to. And for a manager, it's easy to keep things the way they are then.
It's a long old wait, isn't it, between Monday's game and the final? You've had a couple of days off. Is it back into hard training every day now, or is it kind of tapering up towards next Saturday? How are you going to approach that?
Yeah, nothing changes. You know, we're still in season. Yeah, it's a final at Wembley, but at the end of the day, it's just another game. And if you treat it any differently, then you perhaps get a different result at the end of that. And we can't afford to do it. The manager's very, very much a grounded person. You know, we're talking about the celebrations after the game. They were minimal. You know, we want to show appreciation to the fans. We want to acknowledge that we were doing something good. But again, it's just about getting down to it again and preparing exactly the way we have done for the past 15, 16 games under the manager, because what's happened to him is that we've put a lot of effort behind the scenes into how we approach each game, and we'll do exactly the same for this one, if not more.
David, I just wonder what it's been like for you in terms of, I can't imagine what it is like being involved in the club whom you've supported since you were very young. I mean, have you had to kind of change your mindset a little bit?
Yeah, I think it's been quite easy for me up till this season to stay professional in games and not to go over the top when you when things are going well, or you know, when a goal scored. It's been very difficult for me this year. I've tried to make sure that whilst I'm still staying professional, I want to enjoy it as well, because I've known that across my playing career, most of the time I probably didn't allow myself to enjoy any of the good times, because you want to keep yourself level-headed. But I've allowed myself over the course of the season, especially we scored a lot of late goals in the last sort of 9 or 10 games. And I think it's a little bit easier to celebrate goals when there's only a minute left on the clock and you know there's not a lot of chance for the team to get back into it. Certainly after the other night, you know, I took a little 5 minutes to myself when I got back in my car after the game, just to sit and just try and take it in and then just box it up, put it away, and then just get it on to the next one.
Obviously, your main job is looking after the keepers. 8 clean sheets in the last 14 games, only conceded more than once in one of those games. I'm sure most of that's down to you, but a lot of it's down to Anthony Patterson as well, right? Very impressive for a 22-year-old.
Yeah, as a goalkeeping department, we've had a year amongst us where it has been up and down. There's been lots of challenges. You know, Lee Bird started the season. He came out with a groin strain before the Wimbledon game. Obviously, he went on to have problems with COVID. Torben Hoffman's come across from Bayern Munich. Been a real sort of steep learning curve for him. First season at first team level. And he's it's been a real sort of culture shock for him. And he adapted really well. Again, he contracted COVID, came out of the team for a little bit. And then after the Bolton results, he was feeling very unwell. So he came out the side. And that's when Anthony's got his chance. You know, and Anthony himself, he's had his own challenges. He's played a couple of games at the start of the season for us. He was sent out on loan to Notts County, where we sent him there because of the way that Notts County play. He came back from there sort of, not a different goalkeeper, but very much sort of confident in what he realised he was capable of. We're very happy with the way that he's developed and the way that he's handled things, and obviously the managers as well.
He gets to finish his season at Wembley. Right, before we let you go, David, how many breeds of cat are recognised by the American Cat Fanciers Association as being black cats? That is a breed that has a solid black coat.
Maybe there's a trick answer here. Maybe there's only one.
I can see you thinking, but I'm afraid you're incorrect. The answer is actually 22. So when you get back in the dressing room, if you're looking to impress the lads, then that's the way to go about doing it, I reckon. Listen, thank you so much for joining us. We wish you all the best of luck a week Saturday. Congratulations on the season so far.
Cheers.
David Priest of Sunderland there. Right, next we're going to preview the weekend's playoff games.
You're listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. If you want to read more Football League content from the likes of Nancy Frostick, Paul Taylor, Phil Buckingham, Peter Rutzler, and more of The Athletic's best writers, you can do so by heading to theathletic.com/league show and get yourself a subscription of just £1 a month for the next 6 months. That's theathletic.com/league show.
So the towns of Luton and Huddersfield first up in the Championship playoffs. Two teams few of us expected would be in the top half, let alone the top six. Home advantage, obviously you want to make the most of it, Robin, but Luton only lost once there in the league since the end of November. And given that they've recently been beaten at Huddersfield, they'll want a reasonably healthy advantage to take into that second game.
Yeah, I think so. They need to really take advantage of Kenilworth Road and everything that brings with it. I think they're probably going to need to win this leg to have a chance, because just Huddersfield have just been so impressed with them throughout the season, kept thinking they were going to drop off and they just didn't. They even had a chance of going up automatically for quite some time as well. And even though they've been in the playoffs for quite some time. They haven't dropped off. They've won six of their last seven. The only thing I'd say is that they've won 14 games this season by one goal, which suggests they're very good at protecting leads, but very tight. I don't think, again, I'm not sure we're going to be treated to a goal fest in either leg. But I do think the onus is going to be on Luton to get at least one goal, if they can, at Kenilworth Road.
Is that Nathan Jones intensity going to work in their favour, Sam, or is he going to need to dial it back a bit, do you think?
I don't think there's any chance. Zero chance of that. This is his platform, isn't it? He's going to go full blast. He's going to go in an executive box and neck something should they score late on. Yeah, no, I agree with everything Robin said, to be honest. It's going to be really tight, this one. I think it was 0-0 at Kenilworth Road earlier on this season, and the two previous games were 1-1. So there's only been that 2-0, really, where there's been an outright winner recently. I just think Luton are faltering a little bit in terms of the goal scoring. I think they've scored just five times subsequent to that game, or four times in the subsequent games. So they're not creating an abundance of chances. They want Adebayo fit, clearly. He's the one that's yet to show, or yet to be seen, really, in the last couple of games. They've got a lot of players back for the most recent game. And I think set pieces as well. We know Huddersfield are the best in the division in that regard, but Luton very good as well. James Brees back fit. That right-hand side for Luton all of a sudden looks stronger. Harry Toffolo having an unbelievable end to the season on the left for Huddersfield. I'm intrigued to see that battle, both of them supplying a number of opportunities and goals for their teams. So that's an avenue for both. But yeah, Luton want to try and win this one, clearly. And I think if they are, it's probably, as Robin said, going to be by a goal to nil. And they've done that a couple of times away at Cardiff, home to Reading most recently. I could see it going that way. But, you know, Carlos Corberan, he'll be relishing this because the system changes, the in-game changes. He played the back three against Luton last time because he's, you know, wary of Luton's front two. He likes having Jonathan Hogg in the middle of that three. Be interesting to see if he does that again or if he concocts some other potion. Five different shapes the last five games. I just think it's built for someone like Carlos Corberan, as it was for, say this frequently, Wickham a few years ago, Northampton. I just think the playoff system suits this type of team and this type of manager, who are adaptable, who are robust. But yeah, I don't think anything's going to be decided after one game at Kenilworth Road. It's going to be 0-0, or it's going to be 1-0, I'm afraid, sports fans.
Producer, I'd be pointing out that both League One playoffs were won by the team that was at home first. So does that give you an advantage in the way that we don't normally think of, Robin, in that you can kind of, you know, get, I suppose you need to win the home game, but then it makes the second leg a little bit easier, doesn't it? There's not the expectation on you, whereas, I don't know, if you're Huddersfield in this position and you draw 0-0 in the first game, then the expectancy is going to be that you'll win the home game.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because that's the sort of system. I don't know how that was decided. I guess home advantage has always been historically such a big thing. So I guess, yeah, that's why if you finish higher up, you get the second leg. But actually, maybe that does need a rethink. Maybe the club who finishes higher up should get a choice, because maybe it's, yeah, it really interesting point raised because of what happened in the other, in the League One playoffs. Yeah, really interesting. But I guess with, just in terms of Huddersfield, it's all about if they've got their big players fit as well. So they've had no Sorba Thomas, no Matty Pearson or Lewis O'Brien for the run-in. So they could be key if they can, maybe if they're not available for this one, if they can be available for the second leg, that could be really significant.
Right, now then, if anyone would like to fill in for me at my wife's cousin's wedding this Saturday, my DMs are open. It's Sheffield United versus Forest at Bramall Lane, a repeat of the 2003 semi-final. One place and 5 points between them at the end of the regular season. Both games this term between them finish 1-1. If Luton Huddersfield is going to be close, Robin, you'd say the same about this one based on those stats.
Yeah, I think what's really nice of these two sets of playoffs is, like, Luton Huddersfield, both teams kind of full of players that have just been improved by their coaches and no real superstars. And possibly, well, actually, that's true of all of them, that, you know, they kind of put their trust in players that have played at a lower level and they've made them better. Whereas this one's kind of like, I don't want to say the more glamorous one, but it's like Sheffield United are full of players who played in the Premier League 2 years ago, and Nottingham Forest are full of really young, exciting players who are being looked at by top flight teams. So yeah, two really interesting matchups. And yeah, I think this one's going to be very close as well, because you can't really separate them. I do wonder, I know you feel like, I don't know if you feel if Forest were devastated by the loss against Bournemouth, you know, so close to going up without the playoffs. Obviously nothing compared to what Northampton experienced, but picking them up and going for a playoff campaign, I'm not sure. I guess that's a big thing psychologically. And yeah, Sheffield United, they weren't expecting to get them until they conceded the final kick against Hull City. So that's kind of changes things as well. So yeah, I mean, again, it's going to be really, really interesting to see. I just don't think there's going to be much in this one.
You played in the playoffs, Sam. That momentum that Robin's talking about, or lack thereof. So Sheffield United come in having won their last three. Forest had won four on the bounce, but then that crushing defeat against Bournemouth and then the draw against Hull. Does that play into it at all? Does the manager just say, just forget about the regular season, we're preparing for these one-off games? Are you able to do that? Or are you thinking about, oh, I wish we'd gone up automatically?
I think in this scenario, they'll be okay. We're going to come onto a team a little bit later who I think psychologically are going to be damaged. But I think because Forest have had such a brilliant season over a long period of time, I don't think it'll be too concerning. Sheffield United have won their games, but they were brilliant against Fulham, but I don't think they've been ridiculously dominant, consistent, free-flowing for the last couple of months. You know, they've had a good few halves of football. Credit where credit's due. They've turned it on when they needed it. But no, I think this first game is going to be incredibly tight. The league game showed that. I think, again, set pieces, no Yates's threat. I think he scored the equaliser there earlier in the season. Garner's delivery, two similar styles. I think if we're not going to speak about it now, Scott Parker's halftime team talk's been doing big numbers on Twitter, and he referred to that game against Nottingham Forest. They want it to be a basketball game. I think in the second leg, if it becomes that, if Forest need a goal, I think Forest are the stronger outfit. If it's more open, Forest's home form shows you that. 24 goals in their last 8 games at home, won all of them. You know, if the game opens up, I think Forest have got more in their attacking armoury than Sheffield United. And it's going to be quite a contrast. I think they've got more direct runners, Forest, in Zinchenko, Johnson, clearly. There's some good technicians in Sheffield United's forward line. So there is going to be a bit of a contrast there. You know, more players dropping in, probably a bit more intricate. So I think it'll be feeling each other out in this first game. And it could be decided at the City Ground. And if Forest go back there level, you'd have to fancy them. You really would, because of the recent form under Steve Cooper.
I just can't bring myself to agree with that and say it. Our playoff record is so miserable. Also, no Grabbing, no Lowe, no Davis, Yates, Cook, Colback, Spence, all doubts. Just keep it going till the second leg when I'll actually be able to watch it, please, boys. That would be nice. That return leg is on Tuesday night at the City Ground. After this, we'll look ahead to the League Two playoffs. So the League Two playoffs then, the two semi-finals, Mansfield against Northampton is the one we're going to start with. They'll go at it at Field Mill, 7:45 on Saturday. Abbey's worried that the viewing figures might be affected by Eurovision. We'll wait and see as regards that. Stags boss Nigel Clough been all about the positivity. Northampton, not so much. Robin, you kind of alluded to it earlier. I think if you're any of the other three teams in League Two, Northampton's the team you wanted to face, given what happened to them on the final day.
Oh, my word. I just can't imagine. They just must have been on the floor, planning their trip to Dubai, you know, beers, you know, all the selfies they were going to take. I mean, they couldn't do anything more. They're probably thinking, actually, they just shouldn't have conceded that goal on the final day, then this wouldn't have happened. But I mean, this is where John Brady's got to earn his money, isn't it? Like, he's got to pick them up. It's just such a humongous psychological hurdle to get over. I'm sure he wouldn't have let them feel like this is a foregone conclusion, we're going to get it automatically, but they couldn't have envisaged what happened. And I think this is the big factor of what's going to decide this, because I can't imagine they're not hugely affected by what happened. And yeah, it's just all about how they respond. It's really going to be interesting to see how they do that.
Could be a perfect storm as well, couldn't it, Sam? Because we were talking about how home advantage in the first leg has actually been the advantage in the League One playoffs. Mansfield, only Tranmere took more points at home than them in the regular season. And with Northampton still maybe a little punch drunk, Mansfield will be thinking that they can not get the tie won in the first leg, but certainly have a decent advantage to take into the return.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's one of the hardest possible games you could have in the EFL right now. 13 wins out of 15, isn't it? And not only that, but they're scoring so freely as well. I think they've scored 2 in 6 of the last 7 games. You have to go back to October to the last time they failed to score at Field Mill. So you'd think they're going to score, even though Northampton are, I think, along with Tranmere, probably the 2 best defences in the division. Look at those 2 centre-halves, maybe Guthrie and Horsfall have been so prolific for them in terms of goal scoring, but good leaders as well. They need the big characters, and it's all the cliches really, but they will. They'll need the experienced boys to just try and rally them, because as Robin said, during that game, you're thinking about where you're going tonight, where you're going on your holidays, the medal, the pay rise. All those things are going through your mind. Believe me, in the last 15 minutes of that game, the celebrations, the adrenaline, it would have been all building. You know, they would have thought they were there, although they would have been getting the whispers, I'm sure, from the Cobblers fans behind one of those goals and the staff and what have you. But yeah, this is going to be a really tough game. I think because I've said the other 2 are going to be dull as dishwater, I think both league, I'm going to go for it. Both League 2 playoff games are going to be good fun. And I think partly because they're damaged, Northampton, partly because Mansfield score goals, especially at home. But I think Northampton have turned a bit of a corner. You know, they've been scoring at 13 in the last 5 games. This is very different to the Northampton that's got them success so far this season. They've got more creativity. They're scoring more goals. The handbrake seems to have come off in open play as well. 10 in the last 8 games from open play. I think that shows you there's been a little bit of a switch while still having the 2 centre-halves and the big threat from Mitch Pinnock's left foot, the set pieces, that's always going to be there. But I think there's a bit more about this Northampton side now. So hopefully it'll be similar to that Cheltenham-Northampton mayhem we saw a few years ago, where Cheltenham's defence just completely lost the plot in the second leg and allowed Northampton to come back. I think it was 4-3 or something similar ilk over aggregate. So yeah, there's not a lot between the 2 sides, but I think there's going to be goals.
The other thing I would say, maybe you're closer to this, Matt, is that I feel like there's probably quite a lot of pressure on Mansfield to get promoted. They've been in League 2 for 9 years now, and they've only been in the playoffs once. And it feels like maybe that sort of expectation's filtered away a little bit. But in seasons past, they've kind of been the big recruiters of League 2, and it's not really helped them any. And now they've got, you know, Nigel Clough, who's obviously an incredibly experienced manager. I just feel like there might be a bit of pressure on them to actually, you know, go all the way.
Yeah, I think he's tried to deflect that. But yeah, certainly they have spent enough money to be up there contending. And Northampton's last win at Mansfield was in the 2004 playoffs. That was a 3-1 victory. Didn't stop them going out on pens, though. Mansfield then lost the final to Huddersfield using the same measure. The other game then, Swindon Town against Port Vale. They have to wait until Sunday to get their playoff party started. Goes down at high noon at the County Ground. What's the buzz around Swindon ahead of this one, Sam?
It's thriving. Yeah, Harry McCurdy did his little rallying call and the fans have responded unbelievably. By all accounts, Walsall was an incredible atmosphere. I think the early goal obviously helped in regard to getting the win, because Walsall had some chances themselves. It flattered Swindon a little bit, but it was a party atmosphere. I think everyone's looking forward to it. To win 4 games on the spin under extreme pressure, it is very, very impressive. I think they needed to win all 4 as well, as it played out. You know, nobody slipped up on the final day. So I think after the Newport home defeat, after Leighton Orient home defeat, the fans were very despondent. It's not going to be our season. Question marks about Ben Garner. Has he got the most out of this squad? Because it's a good squad that they've been able to put together. And they've produced. They've really produced. And going into these playoffs, yeah, they play an open style. I don't think they can shut up a game particularly, so it should be really good fun. I've softened my stance a little bit. I think it could be a draw at the County Ground, and I think Swindon will win at Port Vale. It was 2-1 to Port Vale at the County Ground and 3-1 to Swindon, the corresponding fixtures. And I think it could be something similar. I think that, you know, Port Vale physically are going to be stronger than Swindon. They'll have a set-piece threat. The average age, I think it's brought down at Swindon by Baudry, who's 34. But Port Vale have got three or four players in their 30s. They've got experience, but they don't have the vibrancy and the youthfulness of Swindon, especially in attack, where McCurdy and Payne bang in form, having the best seasons of their career. And Swindon has got a habit of unearthing these goal scorers, Matt, let me tell you, because I was useless before and after. But the Charlie Austin started there, kicked on. Simon Cox, most fruitful period. Owen Doyle, most recently, although he's always been a good goal scorer. And McCurdy has never produced these type of numbers. So Swindon go in probably with the best attacking player right now. And if he can control that emotion, could be onto a good thing.
Yeah, I think for the neutral, we want Swindon to get to the final just to see what Harry McCurdy's suit's going to be like on the day, because that will be well worth it. Robin, you're not particularly neutral in this case. Are you team Port Vale, presumably, for this one?
I don't know. Kind of missed the derby, so wouldn't mind too much. Obviously, I don't wish any sort of positive vibes for Swindon. That would be against my makeup. But just looking back to where they were in the summer, and I know people, you kind of, obviously, they want to go up, but they were nearly not a team. They were nearly out of business. And the fact that they've managed to put together a team of just fantastic players and are on the verge of promotion, I mean, that is such an incredible turnaround on and off the pitch. So that really should be applauded. I guess the only thing I'd say is that I think they have the worst set-piece record of the teams in the playoffs. And as Sam alluded to there, Port Vale have quite a few big, experienced players. So that might be where Port Vale can hurt Swindon. But as also you talked about Northampton with the handbrake off, that's how Swindon have been playing. I think probably both teams to score wouldn't be a bad shout. I think that's the Swindon way. So, yeah, I think... Yeah, and Port Vale, they, apart from that last win the end of the season against Exeter, they weren't on a great run. So again, going to be intriguing to see in terms of how they approach this and how actually what the level is of their performance.
Yeah, and I think that Darrell Clarke deserves, you know, a lot of credit, I think, this season for getting them so competitive. David Flitcroft's the director of football. He's an ex-Swindon manager, recent Swindon manager as well. So there's a little bit of a subplot there. They'll know each other well. Chris Hussey potentially could be on the left-hand side for Port Vale. He played for Flitcroft at the County Ground. And I like Port Vale's attacking players. And this is without Conlon as well. Why Darrell Clarke deserves credit. He's their best player, Conlon. He's been missing, I think, since the Swindon game pre-Christmas. So they've done this without arguably their most creative force. I like James Wilson. He seems to have found a home there. Obviously, ex-Manchester United, very talented player. And I think counter-attacking away from home really suits them. So, yeah, this could be one that could go right down to the wire in terms of Port Vale getting a favourable result away from home and maybe Swindon, as they've done all season, being able to enjoy themselves on that lovely big Wembley of the North pitch.
I also think Darrell Clarke deserves a lot of credit because obviously he had a substantial amount of time away because of a close bereavement. And his coaching staff just kept them ticking over. I know they had a sort of poor end to the season, but the fact they managed to make the playoffs in his absence, now he's just kind of phased return, just suggests that they, you know, tight-knit coaching staff and tight-knit group who were on the same page.
So that's what we think. What about Paddy Power? Producer Abby will come in and tell us what the odds are on those playoff games.
I will. We'll begin with League Two, because that's where we've just been talking. And it's the two home sides for these first legs that are the favourites. So Mansfield are 23-20, Northampton 12-5, the draw 21-10, and Swindon 6-5, and Port Vale 21-10, draw 11-5. But it is Port Vale who are the slight favourites to be the overall winners and to escape League Two into League One. They are 5-2, with Mansfield, Northampton and Swindon all 11-4 to be promoted. And in the Championship, it is once again the home sides who are the favourites here. So Luton 11-8, Huddersfield are 23-10, the draw 2-1. And that does mean that Sheffield United are the favourites against Forest. They're 6-5, Forest 13-5. But Forest are the favourites to get their way all the way through to Wembley and out the other side to the Premier League. They are 13-8 to win, to be promoted. Sheffield United, second favourites, 9-4. Huddersfield, 3-1. Luton, 9-2. And if, like me, you're a little bit concerned about, you know, the Eurovision clash, well, this will make you even more concerned because the United Kingdom are the second favourites to win the whole contest with Paddy Power.
What?
I know.
More chance of Forest winning the playoffs than the UK winning Eurovision.
11-2.
Surely. Wow. Okay. You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com. All the Paddy Power app prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. T's and C's apply. And when the fun stops, stop. Right. Before we go, after that delightfully catty statement from Forest Green Rovers, I thought that maybe we could do some statements of our own. Somebody, something, some company that you've got beef with at the moment. I want a statement about it in the style of FGR. Sam, what have you got for me?
I regret to announce that I shall no longer be subscribing to ridiculously overpriced delivery gourmet cuisine companies. As much as I enjoy being wooed by free samples at farmers markets, the portion size has ruined this relationship. Despite the glorious tasting ravioli, I can no longer justify the price considering the extra garlic bread, salads, sticky toffee pudding and custard, and copious amounts of biscuits to satisfy my gluttony. Thank you for the slow-cooked ragu. P.S. Treble the portions and you can have my dough back.
Nice. I like it. Preach. Dough with food as well works. Yeah. Very good.
Also, 20 minutes to prepare and cook. No.
No chance.
No meal that can fit through the letterbox is going to satisfy me and my partner. Right?
It's got to be delivery man, isn't it?
It's got to be in a box they got to just lob it over the fence so you get it in the garden.
Maybe a couple of blokes you need as well to actually deliver it, yeah.
Lots of ice packs. Have you got a similar beef, Robin? With beef, yeah. Sam's was, by the sounds of
it. What an inspiration, Dale Vince. Mrs. Cowan has renounced her brief relationship with a certain travel company after a disappointing customer service experience. She does not appreciate having her precious scrolling and podcast listening time taken up by hours of green sleeves. The cancelled flights are a part of travel, of course, but the alternative routes were unsatisfactory, taking in countries that were not part of the itinerary. While a detour from Rome to Dublin sounds like fun, taking in a Wetherspoons, Pret and W.H. Smith's at Dublin Airport was for 3 hours is not how I'd like to spend a surprise trip to the beautiful location of the Republic of Ireland. Mrs. Cowan will forgive for the manner of the experience, but will not be using your services again. She considered outing said company on social media, but felt her meagre following didn't justify the public shaming.
Yeah. I noticed that you two haven't named your company, which makes me feel a bit bad for naming mine, but I'm going to do it anyway. MDA Limited would like to register its dismay at the lack of contact from NCP over the recent £43 to park at Grantham train station for 24 hours shambles. Whilst we accept that customer service is a dying art, a 30-minute phone call to then be told to send an email is simply not acceptable. That said email, sent 10 days ago, has still not been replied to is an extreme disappointment. We hope, if not expect, the matter to be resolved forthwith. Thanks, Dale. You've really helped us get some stuff off our chest there, I think.
Matt, you've got to find a little side road in Grantham.
Yeah, you'd think so. It's just a very built-up area. I did actually look at parking on somebody's drive, but there wasn't a cost saving there, and it's quite a scary walk from the train station.
It's not scary in Richmond. So.
Listener, well done. If you've made it through all that, maybe you've got somebody you've got beef with that you'd like to out publicly. Do get in touch. Until then, many thanks to Robin, to Sam, to Abby, and to David Priest for joining us earlier. We're going to record on Sunday night this week, so Monday morning you'll have a new Totally Football League show dropping in your podcast provider of choice and its platform. Do join us for that if you can. Until then, from all of us here, it's bye for now.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and keep up to date with everything Totally by heading to @thetotallyshow on Twitter and on Insta. Find out the latest subscription offers by going to theathletic.com/league show. The Totally Football League Show is an Athletic Media Company production.
The Athletic.